Blog Talk Radio.
This is an open letter from you and me together. Tomorrow's in our hands now.
Find the words that matter, say them out loud. I make it better somehow.
Welcome to No Small Game. My name is Viata. I'm the executive producer of Soul Purpose Healing, and today I welcome Beth Harris of Beth Ministries for this very special blog talk show on M. Martin Luther King and the World House. So I'll be in the studio. Sometimes Blog Talk Radio doesn't go as planned, and my phone could drop. And if that happens, then you'll hear some music. And that means I have to call back into the studio, which doesn't take usually more than a few seconds. But Beth Harris will be moderating and guiding us through this special program today. In fact, Beth, are you there?
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for just allowing this lesson that we're experiencing and on the journey to heal as we continue this. That is why I'm really excited, and I'm sure the listeners are. We began this three-part. It became three-part in that I wanted to just get together again from what we discussed before, just toward the end of last year, on the issue of, I love this, about our climate and in creating this cultural change that has to occur. And we see what's been happening all over the globe. I mean, just in so many areas of what the earth is trying to say to us, and that we are not caring for it very well. And so I first want to welcome my co-host, Annabeth. If you are on, if you press 1 so that Viana would be able to see your number, I'd love for you to join us right now.
Hi there. Can you hear
Hello.
Me?
Hello. Yes. Hello.
Cool.
Very happy. Yes, very happy that Annabeth joins us from Spain. And I'm going to let you just share a little bit about yourself, my dear. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm great. Grateful this show exists. Let's see. I'm living between southern Spain and South Florida, and my professional background is mostly in healthcare. I've been a registered nurse in obstetrics. I've been a childbirth labor support provider, a massage therapist, a yoga teacher, and now I coach people, life coaching, spiritual life coaching. And I've also been an activist since I was a teenager, and as part of my professional work, I help people do really deep inner work to heal themselves and to be of service in the world. And interestingly, relevant to what's happening now, I've been leading some online prayer groups for quite a number of years for planetary healing. And lately, I've been leading some support groups to help people deal with the shock and their fears since the election. And so that may, we may have some more groups as we have the inauguration coming up. And I just want to mention that a positive note with regards to what's happening in the country right now is that in these support groups, we've used Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's 5 stages of grief. I kind of like to call them 5 stages of loss. And something I've noticed is that as people begin to get to the final stage or to sort of glimpse, experience little bits of the final stage of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work, the stage of acceptance, people seem to shift into a what can I do now? I want to do something mode. And I think this is really important to note because we often associate acceptance with complacency. But there does seem to be something going on in the human spirit that is defying complacency when we move through these stages of loss and into acceptance in an environment of support. And just be specific, I'm talking about loss of one's vision of what this election would have ideally led to. So I think that's just good for us to all know. A lot of times we're concerned about people accepting reality and then becoming complacent. And I think when it's done well, it doesn't especially happen that way. We can actually get active. That's a little piece I wanted to share with everybody. I'm just going to share an early memory that is relevant and a little bit about the work I've done as an activist. My earliest memory of being socially conscious was when I was 7 years old. We were living in Queens, New York, and I woke up very early one morning in the summer, and I went outside, and I was super alert and calm and clear. And there was this little brick wall around the neighbor's house. It was about a foot high. And I climbed up on that wall and I just started walking. And in this really clear early morning state, thoughts began coming to me about war. And it was suddenly very clear to me, very self-evident, that war makes no sense at all. And to the seven-year-old, very simply, war should not exist. And I think that that day, somehow I made a commitment to hold a vision of a world without war. And that it was that day, on an inner level, I became an activist. And in hindsight, I think I was picking up on something in the air, an energy, maybe an awareness that was being felt and shared among many people, people of conscience at the time. This was 1964. This was the year that Dr. King received the Nobel Peace Prize. It was time for a change. Change was happening. And I think that I was feeling it. So at 7 years old, I became part of the movement. And I spent much of my life engaged as an environmental activist and social justice activist. When I was 10 years old, my family moved to Paris in France. And as a teenager, I marched. There are yearly protests, yearly marches in France. At the time, it was mostly about workers' rights. I was also later on an obstetrical nurse, and I became a childbirth activist for the rights of women and babies to have natural drug-free birth. And I've worked on many political campaigns for progressive elected officials. And especially, I've worked towards policies and laws that protect our planet Earth. So I'm really happy to be participating here. And I thank you for the time to share a little bit about myself. And I'd love to hear, participate, be present for the rest of the show. So thank you.
Okay, Annabeth, this is Vieta. Beth just texted me that she's got a train going by her window, so she doesn't want to interfere with the show and the train noise. So can you go ahead and introduce the first guest? And we'll open up their mic as they press one.
Sure. And I also want to thank you. I'm sorry, I came on a moment late and I wasn't sure if you were on the call. I didn't hear you. So I want to thank you so much for creating this program, for being the host for it here. Our first guest is Sue Blythe, creator of Future Flash, Climate Change, with the MLK World House Challenge for children, youth, adults, and elders. And Sue lives at the Sustainable Living Center of the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice. Do we have Sue on the line?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Really happy to be able to tune in here. I'm most interested in hearing from the guests we've lined up today. And so I would like to just pass that on. We have some wonderful people that I'm eager to hear from.
Cool. So then I think I'll go ahead and introduce the next guest, Jeff Ainscow, with the Conscious Elders Network. And I'm going to read a little quote. I believe it's a quote from Jeff. "We as elders know that it is our collective responsibility to do better, to bring more awareness and consciousness to protecting the greater community of life and its future generations. We know we must act." And Jeff remembers the civil rights movement and reflects on the legacy of Dr. King. So can we welcome Jeff here? Are you on the line, Jeff?
Jeff needs to press 1 if he's there. I have other phone numbers, but Jeff, can you press 1 if you're on the studio or in the call board? Okay, no Jeff yet.
Okay, I'm actually going to go ahead and, well, actually we can move on and invite the next guest on. If you think that's the right next step. So Rodney Long, Rodney is actually scheduled to come on at 5:30. So I don't know if Rodney's on yet. Don't want to assume that. Yeah, why don't you go ahead and check.
Rodney, if you're the one. No, Rodney.
Okay. So let's see if, well, again, you know, the other people are scheduled on later. They may not be coming on right away. I'll tell you what I'm going to do before we do that. Well, let's go ahead with John Raymer. John Raymer is the next person.
It looks like John's there. 206-972, your mic is open.
Great. Hi, John Raymer is here.
Hi there, John. I'm Annabeth Carson.
Hello, Annabeth.
How about if I read a little intro for you?
Okay.
Okay. So, John is the founder of the Compassion Games International, which promotes acts of kindness and service throughout the year, starting with the Martin Luther King Week. He has worked over the past 10 years with the International Institute for Child Rights Development and utilizing the power of empathy to spark engaged action with youth. So, would you like to tell us a little bit about the Compassion Games International and
sure.
your work with that?
Yeah, well, it started, we had a visit in Seattle from His Holiness the Dalai Lama in 2008. And as a result of that, I started the International Campaign for Compassionate Cities, which was a part and is a part of the Charter for Compassion. And there are now over 400 cities around the world that have embraced this idea of bringing compassion to life in their communities. One city in particular was outstanding, and we honored the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, and his team in 2011, and the mayor wrote me a letter saying they were the most compassionate city in the world and would be so till proven otherwise. And I thought it was such a great idea and such a fun and challenging way for communities to organize into teams to do service and action in the world. You know, Martin Luther King said, you know, everybody can be great because everybody can serve. So the Compassion Games have been going on now since 2012. There's been over 5 million people served. There are hundreds of teams all over the world in 40 countries. And in fact, we're partnering with the Ali Center, which is based in Louisville, and the co-opetition, that's what we call these challenges when people and teams sign up, is MLK and Ali, 5 days of courageous service that's starting tomorrow and goes through January 17th, which is Muhammad Ali's birthday. And it would be his 75th birthday if he was still alive. So we're part of the Corporation for National Community Service that treats MLK Day as a national day of service and supporting teams all over the world, not just in the U.S., who are inspired by the legacy of Martin Luther King, especially now in light of the challenges we're all facing to rise up and do good in the community by doing acts of kindness and service and organizing projects and sharing them on our Compassion Report map, in which you can see examples of what communities are doing all over the world. And that's on the Compassion Games website, compassiongames.org.
Wow. Very cool. That is very exciting. I think that's such trip, the Louisville, Kentucky step forward like that. Go ahead.
Well, in fact, the mayor said they were so compassionate, they'd come out to Seattle to help us beat them. I said, wow, we're going to have to really be more compassionate than we've ever been. I mean, it's this idea of reframing competition. We call it survival of the kindest. It's a co-opetition, like we said, The root of the word competition is competere, which means to strive together. So at this crazy time in our world, we're culture hacking to suggest that, as so many people know, in fact, I just saw a beautiful video of George Lucas talking about how important compassion is in one's life to live a good life. So the compassion games, you can't lose the compassion games, and the more people play, the more people win. And inspired by Mayor Fisher from Louisville, now there are teams all over the world taking on a unique kind of challenge to rise up in face of all the challenges we're facing to do better in the world. Inspired by our chairperson is Hereditary Chief Phil Lane, and from the Dakota Nation. And, of course, so many people who've tuned in have been so inspired by the work of the water protectors in North Dakota at Standing Rock, and the incredible example of leadership shown by Wesley Clark Jr. in going as a veteran and seeking forgiveness from the tribes. There's a lot of healing going on in this space of challenge right now, and MLK would be proud to see people performing these kinds of courageous acts of service.
Yes. I want to take a moment and just segue about the water protectors. There is a movement happening right now for people in Florida and people all around. In North Florida, there is a pipeline that is in process and actually starting this weekend, people are going up there and beginning a camp. They're beginning to do something that could end up being very parallel to what is going on where the Dakota Access Pipeline is going through. And I'm going to get the information to share on the line here in a little bit for people who might be interested, because it's not just happening in one place. And this is Florida's Dakota Pipeline that is, or Dakota Access Pipeline situation. This is Florida's Standing Rock that is starting to happen now in Florida.
That's right. There are standing rocks all over the world. That's what Chief Arvel Looking Horse has been saying, and that's what we all know. And this is a moment in solidarity to rise like we never have before.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I just want to check, is Francis back with us by any chance?
Hey, darling. So, I am, and thank you. Thank you for continuing. Very interesting, and we will give out that information toward the end of the program. Mayor Beth, do you want to just go ahead and introduce the next guest?
Sure. Let's go back and see if Jeff is with us. Jeff Ainscow. Can we get you to press 1 and come on the line?
No, Jeff, there's the only other caller is an 813 area code, but the no Jeff, evidently.
Well, let's go to the next one. We want to get everyone on to get a chance for them to just share before we open the lines, so there may be some questions or comments. So just go ahead to the next one.
Okay, so after Jeff, there was Rodney Long, who also was not on the line earlier. Let's see if Rodney's with us now. Rodney is scheduled for 5:30, so it's possible that he's not quite on the line yet. Rodney, if you're there, if you could press 1.
Okay, there are 4, so maybe the next one is
okay,
possible.
Next, we've got Reverend Russell Mayer.
Okay, I think he's supposed to come on it too.
Yeah.
All right, so is anyone in the queue? Have anyone else press 1? May have a question, we can kind of just go from there. If there are any in the queue.
Okay, 813, your mic is open.
Yes, I know, this is Reverend Russell Mayer. So I've just been listening, and when you're ready for me,
thank
I'll
you.
Do whatever you ask.
Thank
Aww, well, bless you. Thank you for being on with us. And I'll just go ahead and let Mary Beth give you an introduction, and we'll take it from there. Okay, Mary?
Okay.
Annabeth, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So Reverend Russell Meyer is the Executive Director for the Florida Council of Churches and is the convener for the Florida Interfaith Climate Action Network. And the third assembly of the network is February 23rd to 25th. And Reverend Meyer is an advocate for One Tampa Bay, which is a model of communal intention for the well-being of all in the bioregion. And he is passionate about realizing an anti-racist society. So, welcome, Reverend Russell Meyer.
Well, thank you. It's good to be on with you. It's the first time that I have participated in this format, so it's great to hear the various things that people are talking about. So when Sue invited me to be on, there were a number of things that she had in scope. And so I just want to back off a moment and ask at what point you would like me to direct some comments, because I'm involved in a wide range of issues, as my opening bio said, about witnessing to an anti-racist Florida. That's the waterfront of culture when we talk about that.
Francis, are you on? Okay, well, Francis may have an issue with her phone. So I would love you to explain what you mean by the waterfront.
Well, so if we step back and just think about how racism fits into our society, it's been a topic that a lot of people have discussed and discounted and whatever. And, you know, we've lived beyond it. We're post-racial America. We've elected the first African descent president, et cetera. Dr. Martin Luther King, in his famous Riverside speech, Beyond Vietnam, a year to the date that he was assassinated, spoke of a triumphant of evil, as it were, three things that made up the American culture that just kept it in chains. Those three things were extreme materialism, militarism, and racism. And what he spoke about is that the three of those were bound tightly together in the forming of this society. How does that work out? We're in Florida, so the first European installation with any sustainability was here in Florida. The Spanish brought with them slavery. Their presence in Florida and the Caribbean completely wiped out the original indigenous people, the Calusa and other. And then with other European settlement in the United States, particularly in the southern colonies, various peoples of the Creek Nation fled to Florida and the Everglades and its wilderness for safety. They came to be called the Seminoles, along with runaway slaves and others. So from our very beginning, racism has been part of the structure of Florida. When Andrew Jackson was made the military governor after the end of the War of 1812, his official policy was that Florida was for whites only. Now, when we begin to just look at the various forms of political and social and cultural institutions and policies, what we see baked into them is an understanding of human value based upon skin complexion. And that is just so deeply baked into everything we do. Today, I've stepped out of a conference to plan the end of the death penalty there are 385 people sitting on death row. The majority, or the largest share of those, are people of color. A large number of them are people of diminished mental capacity, or at least when they supposedly committed their crimes. Since 1970, 26 people have been exonerated on death row in Florida alone. So Florida sets a record about that. When you begin just to look at the death penalty, how it's applied, why it has been replicated, why it is continually used, you see that there is a systemic institutional racism. As a pastor in Hillsborough County is number four of the 10 worst counties for social mobility in the United States, according to a study published by Stanford and Harvard researchers last year. What that means is any child who is raised up in Hillsborough County is going to have a lifetime earning of $3,500 per year below the national average. And what creates such a overwhelming statistic is the fact that there is a large minority population whose education disparity, policing disparity, and et cetera, just continues to replicate itself one year to the next. So when I talk about the waterfront, I'm talking about the way the legacy of racism, the legacy of slavery, continues to show themselves in almost every aspect of Florida culture. And to imagine what an anti-racist society would be, to imagine what a society would be that didn't have that legacy and it didn't impact people, well, that's a true work of the imagination. And it's a very difficult exercise, because if you're really honest with yourself, you find that the biases you've been brought up with continue to sneak back in. And climate and environment is just one illustration. To give you an example, with the sea level rise that is happening in southern Florida, the highland in South Florida is a ridge that runs right down to the middle of Miami. That ridge was always set aside as the throwaway spot for where minorities lived. The railroad ran down along that ridge because it was high and wouldn't get flooded out, and so people were living along the tracks. As Miami-Dade loses land to the sea, there is a push now onto that high land, displacing the populations who have been there for generations simply because they don't have the wealth and the equity to protect themselves. It's just another way in which the legacy of racism begins to show its ugly face as we try and face the issues that we all face, the change of the environment equally, but we will, our society is going to have to work very, very hard to make certain there is equity in the way we face the changing of the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the hard realities. Yes. So I want to just check. Francis, are you back on the line? Yep. Yes or no? Okay. So thank you so much. When you talk about facing these realities, do you want to give one priority in your mind?
Well, there are really sort of two priorities that we're working on right now in the Florida Council of Churches. One is criminal justice reform. There's going to be a major push in Florida over the next 2 years for criminal justice reform. The legislature knows that it's a budget buster. We spend more money on prisons than we do on universities. Last year, there were 200 minor riots in Florida prison system because it's understaffed. There's not enough money for the guards that are needed. We incarcerate. We have over 105,000 people in jail today in the state prison system, not counting county jails. We're going to release 30,000. Two-thirds have addiction problems. We have no rehab services. So we've arrested a lot of people for nonviolent drug offenses. We can't afford it anymore. The legislature is going to have to figure out some way to go. The way people are talking about doing it ends up saying, we're going to put an ankle bracelet on them. We're going to imprison them in their own house. We're going to charge them a fee that represents paying for their own lodging. And we're going to try and depopulate the prisons, but we're going to increase the debtor society. That will fall disproportionately on minorities and the poor. We have an opportunity in this period of time to say we don't want a system based on punishment. We want a system based on restorative justice. So how do we put restorative justice in every school, in every community, in every courthouse, that the primary purpose of the criminal justice system is to restore relationships in the community? That's going to take a major change unless people of Florida say that's the kind of criminal justice system we want. It won't happen. So that's number one. Number two, it's educational equity. When you look across Florida's educational system, what you find is deep, deep disparities in discipline and educational outcomes, even though the Florida Constitution guarantees high-quality education to every child in Florida. That educational system actually has had racial quotas established by the current administration for determining what the acceptable graduation rates are. So we're engaged with some other communities, PTAs and others, to begin to talk about what does educational equity look like from the grassroots up. Those two items really go together. We have to bring an end to the school-to-prison pipeline. So the two of those ideas work together. They just go at the problem from different angles, and both of them would help bring about a less racist society.
Thank you. Thank you for the enlightening information and for your work. I'm going to take a look and see if Jeff Ainscow has arrived on the line. Jeff, if you're there, if you could press 1. Just wait a moment. No, Jeff? Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
You are. Great. Okay, welcome. Let me read again the little intro blurb.
It's taken me over half an hour to get connected.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Actually, let's see. Is Frances on?
I am on. Thank you. And thank you for joining us today. We called your name a couple of times. So Anna Bass is going to go ahead and read just an intro just mm-hmm. before you speak. Just for the audience again. Go ahead, Mary Beth.
So Jeff Ainscow is with the Conscious Elders Network. And his statement is, we as elders know that it is our collective responsibility to do better, to bring more awareness and consciousness to protecting the greater community of life and its future generations. We know we must act. Jeff remembers the civil rights movement and reflects on the legacy of Dr. King.
Okay,
back
so
to you,
you want me to speak to that now?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe first I should just introduce myself to explain my accent. I was born and raised in Manchester, England. I arrived in California 3 months before Dr. King was assassinated. And I was not at that time familiar with all the cultural norms and what was going on in the USA. But I soon became aware of it. And my first contact with Dr. King was the I Have a Dream speech. I heard that in England when I was a student, and it really moved me, and so that always stayed with me. And I was really, really sad when he was killed. But I think the thing that struck me about him was he had a much bigger goal than civil rights. He had a much bigger goal than race relations. And his goal was to erase injustice from the world, or from humanity on the world. And I'd say since 1968, I've been involved in that for the last 40 years here in California. And 2 years ago, we started the Conscious Elders Network. It's an organization directed at older people who are normally retired and don't have to work to make a living, and they have time, talent, experience, and motivation to work for the benefit of the planet. And we don't like to call it retirement. We prefer to call it refirement. So we want to take the energy and spark of older people and ignite it and bring them to working for the benefit of all life on the world. I was born in 1941 in the middle of World War II in Europe. And at that time, there were 2.4 billion people on the planet. Today, there are 7.4 billion people on the planet. So it's tripled in my lifetime. And I have a 2.5-year-old grandson. And when he is my age, it will be the year 2087. And if we reduce the population growth from tripling in that lifetime just to doubling, it means we'll have 15 billion people on the planet by that year when he's my age. And it's not a sustainable scenario. And one thing Dr. King did not know, and in fact none of us knew in 1968 when he was killed, was that the Earth was going to come to a place where humanity demanded more than the Earth can supply. And it was a case of going into overshoot. It's very similar to your bank account. If you start taking out more money from your bank account than you're putting in, you know it's not a long-term sustainable way of living. Then you have to change. That happened on the Earth in the 1970s, 1980s. The humans demanded more than Earth can supply. So just take food as an example. We're now using much more than Earth can supply. Take resources. Wood and resources we use to build shelters and roads and cars and all this stuff. We are using way more than Earth can supply. We're exhausting all our resources. And then half of the job the Earth does is reprocess our waste. And now we all know that the pollution and the ozone layer and the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is getting beyond what the Earth can recycle, can reprocess, can deal with the waste. And so in the 70s and 80s, we went into overshoot. That has never happened before in the 250 million years that Homo sapiens have been on the planet and the hominids have been around. It's never happened. And so we're in a totally different world. And I think if Dr. King was alive today and he knew that information, he knew that fact, he would be even more stronger talking about saving resources and changing the way we think. So one last comment on the way we think and what the Conscious Elders Network is trying to do. The old way of thinking is to see the world and the Earth as our pantry, our lumberyard, and our waste dump. The new way of seeing the world is a living, self-regulating, living planet. Because there is a relationship between all life and the atmosphere, between all life and the oceans, and between all life and the geosphere. And it is a self-regulating system. One example. The sun has increased in temperature and brightness 20% since it was born 4.6 billion years ago. And so it's constantly getting hotter. It's increased by about 1,000 degrees in temperature today. But the Earth has always stayed from 0 to 100. And that's why liquid water has always been on the surface of the planet. How is the Earth stayed between that small range of temperature when the sun has increased 1,000 degrees? And the answer is that the Earth and life on Earth is a self-regulating system. And it is able to do that through moderating the atmosphere and the geosphere and the oceans. and life and Earth work together to keep the surface of the planet compatible for life. And my final point is, if we don't understand how that works, and we don't at the moment, if you look at the way we're behaving, we're not going to survive. And so the Conscious Elders Network is dedicated to the survival of all life for all future time on planet Earth. I think that gives you an overview of what we're about.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And so needed. I mean, so long ago, as you mentioned, this occurred in the 70s and 80s. People still aren't aware, as you can see, with this new administration, like oblivious of what's happening. So
yeah.
How do we get our children more conscientious? I think it begins there, because we want to leave the world in a better place. And so we are the examples, and we have to actively participate, because, of course, they're the imitators of what we do. So how do we, I love what you're doing with the Conscious Elders. It's wonderful. And I also want to ask the Reverend, what is the church as a whole? What's the responsibility? I mean, we know the responsibility, but how do we help to awake that institution? Because it's the largest. When you consider the religious institution, people are coming together to listen, but the message has not moved the people to act. So how do we begin to make that change? So I guess I'm asking both of you the question, but I want you, I guess, to answer first from the Conscientious Elder. How can we, and that is a wonderful way, of course, getting elders involved. Many times it seems like they don't know what to do when they retire or what have
yeah.
you. It's like, there's so much to do.
Yeah.
I'll let you answer that.
I'd say the answer to your question is, how do we get other people to do it? Is you have to do it yourself first. So we have to demonstrate, then teach, and then advocate for the new way of seeing the world and the new way of living. So, for instance, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I drive an electric car. I've had it for over 6 years. It is powered by the solar panels on my roof. So for 6 years, I've not spent a penny on gasoline or maintenance.
Wow.
And I've not put one molecule of CO2 in the atmosphere in 6 years because the electric car allows you to do that. So I plug it in every night, just like I plug in my cell phone, and in the morning it's got a full charge in it, and off I go.
Mm-hmm.
We grow our own food. You know, we grow tomatoes and avocados, and we've got oranges and fruit trees just in our small lot. I live in a suburban house in the middle of Silicon Valley with thousands of others. But you buy food from local markets. You go to the farmer's market. You recycle, reuse whatever you can all the time. And you treat your neighborhood as your living room. So if I see trash out on the street, I pick it up, just like I would if it's in my living room. And I do that because it's an issue of identity. It's like, who are you? Where are you? And where are you going? And if you don't know who you are, you won't take responsibility for the part that you don't own. And most of us just see within the next few days, the next week, hardly the next month, myself, my immediate family, and then maybe my next door neighbor. Nobody sees themselves as related to everyone on the planet. Nobody sees their living room as a whole planet. And if, just imagine if nobody dropped a piece of litter on the planet ever again, it would transform the whole way humanity lives. And so I think the first thing is to demonstrate, just in your own house, your own school and your own job with your own kids, how to live in the new way. But to do that, it takes a change of mind, it takes a change of identity, and that's what we're going for. It's abuse an elder. An elder is different than an old person. An elder has some wisdom. An elder has assimilated knowledge during their life. They have examined their life and come to a state of understanding it from a new frame. So an elder is not automatic. Getting old is automatic. Nothing we can do about it. It happens every year. But becoming an elder is not automatic. It's a conscious movement into the final stage of life. And so that's how we describe it.
I love that. And you said, so first of all, demonstrate. It kind of reminds me of the song Simple Things. And you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
And from there, did you say advocate?
Demonstrate, right? Teach, and advocate.
And then advocate. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Prince, because, you know, if 10% of the world's, the Western world's population became vegetarians, it would make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, the animal agriculture puts nearly as much carbon dioxide and definitely more methane into the atmosphere than any of the other sectors, transportation sector and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a much bigger reason for not eating meat than just being a fanatical vegetarian or a zealot for animal rights. The big reason is survival of all life on the planet. And then it's worth doing when you see that.
Yes, indeed. And I am just going to go ahead and let the Reverend answer, Reverend Mayer, the same question.
Yeah, so it's Meyer, but that's all right. Don't worry about it. That's all right. That's okay. Not to worry about it. I get pronounced many ways. Oftentimes, I'm made plural, and I do suffer from a certain kind of multi-personality presence. So it's all right. So I want to go to a hidden assumption in your questions, because my reading is that it's the religious communities, the spiritual communities, whether it's Western religion, Eastern religion, or indigenous religion, that has always been cognizant of the interconnectivity of all reality, that we are a piece of one another. I mean, the famous English divine John Donne, no man is an island unto himself, deeply embedded in all religious traditions is the understanding of the interconnectedness of all things. Judaism and Christianity are the two religions that have a doctrine called interpenetration. In Christianity is that the persons of God interpenetrate in the reality of one another, and out of that interpenetration comes forth all creation. In Buddhism, it's all reality interpenetrates with one another, and is a reflection. Everything is a reflection of everything else. And so these are traditions that are perhaps have been lost in the corporate-based mass media culture we live in now, but they've always been there. It was the churches that tried to stop the first atomic bomb and the proliferation to create a world peace movement after having dropped the bomb. There's a horrific damage to the environment there. It was a Lutheran theologian in New Delhi in 1961 that said, if you believe in Christ, you have to believe in the care of creation, was the first thing. And that had ever been clearly said. The patriarch, the ecumenical patriarch of the Orthodox Church is known as the Green Patriarch. He's constantly putting this forward before Rome and the Catholics. Pope Francis wrote Laudato Si last year, first encyclical address to the whole world, not just to the Catholic Church, basically based upon care of the environment. and fair treatment of the poor, linking those two together. You can't do one without the other. Martin Luther King, when he linked together materialism and racism and militarism at the heart of that, you have to. That's a three-legged stool. You can't deal with the extreme materialism from which the degradation of the earth is coming without dealing with the racism, the inequity by which it's lived out, or the militarism, the way we tried to protect it. Thomas Berry went to the United Nations in 1975 in a very famous speech, Catching the Power of the Wind, said this: we realize, of course, that many divisions and antagonisms arise from a faulty spirituality and an inadequate religiosity, that we who speak here bear a heavy responsibility for the present perils of humanity and the earth process. Yet we're committed to real change and to establishing a more acceptable spiritual context within which the nations and the peoples of the earth can effectively experience the higher meaning of the human venture, live in harmony with the earth, and reconcile their differences. So all of the major denominations of traditional Christianity that didn't just grow up on American soil but have presence elsewhere have major statements in favor of the environment and working for the environment and being spiritually connected to the environment. So it's there. I think what we're facing is a culture that deprecates everything, whether it's the environment or human life, or we're living in a culture that believes in use and throw away, and we're beginning to see at every level that there's no place to throw anything away. It's a closed system. We live in it. We're not segregated from it. We're not distant from it. Whatever we do outside is what we do inside. We sort of began this show talking about the deep healing. I really appreciated hearing that. And so I think one of the things that we're trying to do, particularly in the traditional churches, is help people connect the deep internal healing that needs to happen for all of us with the healing of the world, the repairing of the world, as Judaism speaks about it, that the two go together. I got to work on myself as well as work in the world. There is a trauma that we have all faced and we face every day, and we have to be willing to look at the traumatization deep within our own selves, go through that deep healing, and as we do that, we begin to experience a more loving and kind and compassionate way of walking on the face of the earth. In the United States of America, almost every person, when they get up in the morning and walk outside, expect to have concrete under their feet out of fear that they might walk barefoot on their mother earth. And we need to help people understand that their mother is ill, and any loving child wants to be at the side of his or her mother, caring for her so that she can be made well. And so that's kind of the basic message that we work with, particularly in our Interfaith Climate Action Network and in the assembly that's coming up. We have a common mother, and we need to do whatever we can to be involved in that healing. Healing Mother Earth is also healing our own souls. And so our assembly that's coming up at the end of February 23rd through the 25th in Orlando is really going to be trying to connect those together. We're going to be speaking from the theme of water. Our theme is Floridan, water is our life. And we're going to be looking at how whatever water I drink, you have drank too at some point. That we are bound together because the thing that sustains all of our lives is the water that passes through us. And when that goes bad, well, then the game's up, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And it's something that was said about we have to know who we are in order to extend ourselves to care. And I think that's the problem. Like when we see the beautiful churches, particularly in ethnic communities, and then the trash around and people hanging out and all that. So it's like there has to be a way to awaken everyone. Everyone has to take a part in this. It's sort of like the political issue. People have been so disappointed, but then how many were actively involved, actively engaged? So we have to do our part, whatever that is. And how do we awaken the consciousness, particularly within the church body? And as you mentioned, there have been some progress. It's just there's a long way to go, and yet we're in danger. And
so one of the
realize it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of the things is we don't have to get everybody. You know, that question often comes up is how do I get everyone to think this way? And you don't have to get everyone. Most global changes have been started by individuals and small groups. And then marketing people say today if 15% of any collective group adopts a new idea, it is unstoppable, and it will go through the rest of the population. And that's because at least 50% of the population are followers, and there's only a few leaders in the whole collective group. And so the idea that we have to get everyone is more of a roadblock into producing change than an energizer to it.
Oh, okay. So you said maybe about half is what you probably 15%, should try.
They say, it's like 10% is unstoppable. 10% is embedded, 15-20% is unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
So just take the hula hoop or the Volkswagen or the electric car or seatbelts. I mean, seatbelts is a great example. You know, when they first suggested wearing seatbelts in cars, there's a huge resistance against it. But then once you got 15% of the people buying cars and insisted on seatbelts, the rest just followed.
Mm. Okay.
So the Brahma, if I might just offer this, the Brahma Kumaris have conducted extensive meditation trials across several major cities. And what they have determined from these meditation trials is that something like the square root of 1% of the population whose consciousness is focused on a shared intention of compassion, of real merit and definable purpose, actually begins to change what is happening in the whole environment. And as you begin to build out on this idea of being able to bring together just a small number of people who get it,
yeah,
who are then willing to be very focused about it and to work on it, they begin to send out ripples, as it were, in the environment where they are that begin to help bring about transformation to the larger whole. So it's not about getting everybody in the room. It's about getting the right consciousness in the room with enough people committed to see it carry it out so it can have a ripple effect.
Yes.
And so what we're trying to say to the churches is, how do you go outside of your house of worship? How do you take your skills in civil discourse and mutual respect and open conversation? How do you take those into public and talk about things that really matter for everybody, not just make them about your religious doctrine, and begin to generate new public spaces where consciousness for the whole is what we're going to engage in? So that's kind of a project we're looking at and trying to encourage churches and communities to think about getting out of their box, as it were, and creating this public space where everybody can begin to get involved in thinking about what it means to be a better human race.
Yes, and I hold monthly vigils on different issues, like this month of January. Well, the month of January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, and we hold monthly vigils dealing with why people are vulnerable to those type of crises, you know, because we deal with the complex trauma, sexual assault, and we hold the vigil centered around something that's happening in that month. So this month of January, we begin the vigil on World Day of Migrants and Refugees.
That'll and be Saturday.
Yes, exactly. We have fasting vigils. I have actually prayer and fasting vigils, but every month is a fasting vigil and a type of fast that's very healthy to promote the idea that all animals fast and we have to give the body a break. It's wonderful to, at a time, for a cause. So that's basically what we do. And then I will have workshops. The last workshop was during the month of April. I only try to do once a year because I'm basically one person doing a lot. And so I had the sexual assault workshop in April because April is Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. And then next month we have on the fourth Friday of February, it's called Children in Peril. That's our fasting vigil. But every month is a different type and a different cause. But it's dealing with trying to awaken just the consciousness of the community. We want to, you know, liberate, you know, from societal distress, you know, from, you know, these issues that we're confronted by, and wanting people to share as a testimony. Christ said, if you don't believe me, believe the works. And that's what's important, because he said not to be just listeners, but the doers is what's going to be effective. And so I think a lot of people are just not being motivated. They're going and they're hearing, perhaps, but for some reason they're not motivated in doing anything. As a matter of fact, most times they think they've done their part when they just showed up and paid tithes. So that's an issue. But I think, John, you wanted to share. You wanted to add something? John Raymer?
Well, sure. I'm grateful to everybody for all the good work they're doing. And I think, you know, it starts from within. This is the wisdom that has guided all our work on compassion, starting from within, working in a circle, in a sacred manner. We heal and develop ourselves, our relationships in the world. And I'm grateful to each of us and all of us for what we're doing. And this is a moment that we need to learn how to turn what we have into what we need and find these strategies that connect. So many people are frustrated by the sense that we're in silos. And I'm grateful to Sue for inviting us here. And the co-opetition that we launch tomorrow is a beautiful example of two great, we call heavyweights of love and compassion champions, with MLK and Ali. And we send out missions every day to agents all over the world. And we, as a good partner, want to reach out and support other organizations. And I certainly think using water is such a powerful, simple idea, that water is sacred, is a unifying call. And we can see the leadership of the young people at Standing Rock is another example of this, who are praying for everybody, including the the Morton County Sheriff's Department and the corporations that are behind this. We've got to find ways to build bridges to working cooperatively together and strengthening the whole in the process. And certainly Compassion Games and the whole work on Compassionate Cities is you know, one thing we can bring to the party, and I'm eager to share with others and learn from what you're doing to build a better future. This is kind of the, I think, the underlying sense that everyone has. Everyone wants a better future for their kids. And we just traveled around the country, Summer and I. We were in 25 states for the last 7 weeks, really asking people what makes America great. Trying to get a better appreciation and understanding for difference and how we can connect through our similarity and innovate through our diversity. And I agree, we don't need everyone, but we need a critical mass of us to recognize that enough is enough, and we need to change our direction, or we're likely to wind up where we're headed.
Well, I need to go in about 5 minutes at 11:15.
Oh, okay.
I have a question.
Pardon?
I have a question. This is Beata. I'm in the studio. Was it Jeff talking about electric cars? Who lives in the Bay Area?
This is Jeff.
That's so fascinating to me. Can you tell me about how much electric cars cost today?
Between $30,000 and $40,000. About the same as a normal car.
Okay, 30, 40. And see, do you have a small four seater, or how large is yours?
Yeah, so it's the biggest car I've ever owned. It's a five seater hatchback. It's a Nissan Leaf, and there's about five of them on my block. People have them.
Wow, I really feel like that's the solution to Standing Rock water protectors, is we all have to invest in cars that don't need oil. And I have a question for, is it Sue? No, Annabelle, you said there's a protest going on in northern Florida. I live in northern Florida, so can you tell us where that's taking place?
Absolutely. I'm going to give you a Facebook page that has all the information. It's the page is called, it's several words, so I'll have to write it down probably. Mass Civil Disobedience. And don't get scared. It doesn't mean everybody's planning to get arrested. It's just that that's the nature of this kind of protest. To stop the Suwannee River crossing. So mass civil disobedience to stop this Suwannee, and Suwannee is S as in Sam, UWANNEE, river crossing. There are several sites, several Facebook pages that are addressing this. This one has all the practical information, and it has a really cool picture at the top. So that should get anybody going who's interested. And I suggest that if people are not going, that they go to the site and they go to the other sites that are connected and stay aware, get to be aware, you know, get onto that site, like that site, so that you get to follow what's going on. Because if it ends up that they end up camping out up there, they're going to need support, and they're going to need support from lots of people around. And people can be very helpful by offering support, whether it's financial or otherwise, in order to help this continue.
Well, and I also interesting that it's right in my backyard now. I've been following Standing Rock in North Dakota, and I thought I could never go up there with all that cold weather. And then here it is. The universe says, okay, how about right in your own backyard? So I don't have any excuse now.
Annabeth, since you are mm-hmm. making the announcement, why don't you just go ahead and make them, since some people will have to leave. We only have like 15-20 minutes anyway, but go ahead.
Yes,
and
I'd just like to say goodbye and thank you to everyone.
Thank you so much, and we will be in touch.
Goodbye.
So I also want to mention that Rodney Long did not come onto the line. I don't know if Rodney is actually listening, and I don't know if we want to invite him on. I mean, I can certainly go make the announcements, but I just wanted to acknowledge in case he's there.
Okay, let's see. Did he come on? Would you press 1 if you are on the line so that you're in the queue? Rodney, if you're on, would you press 1?
Can you speak,
for him, perhaps, if he's not here. Can you hear me okay?
What did you say, Sue? I didn't hear
you. What I would like to say is that Rodney Long was the original founder of the Martin Luther King Commission of Florida, and it has been growing for all these many years, remembering the life and legacy of Dr. King. And since, every year they have one full week and probably a pretty full month of activities in our area for every level of interest. And they have, major a banquet, and they have children's activities. They have awards and scholarships and contests, and they have a brain bowl and meetings in churches and community centers, all focused on how do we translate this dream of Dr. King into action in our community. And it's such a rich tapestry here of people who are working together. And I think that, Beth, if you would read that World Health quote about Dr. King and just remind people of the wonderful vision that he had, not only for the races coming together, but also people of all religions and traditions. So what's happening is I'm driving right now, and I'm not able to read it. So, Beth, if you have that handy, could you read that quote?
Let me read it. And right after the announcement, I will read that. I think it would be a wonderful closing.
Okay.
Since we continued with this. Go ahead, Annabeth. Okay, Annabeth, are you there?
Sorry, I'm here.
Okay, great.
Okay, announcements. Upcoming blog talk shows. January 15th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. All the times are 8:30 Eastern Time. January 15th, 8:30 p.m. on the Liberal Soul teleconference. There will be a special guest to present a U.S. economic strategy. And the phone number for that to dial in is 716-748-9539. The code is 06137 # So the next one is January 16th, which is a Monday, at 6:15 a.m. is the Intercessory Prayer Circle, where we give highlights of reports from the prayer and fasting chains and share feedback from affiliates. The phone number is the same. I'll repeat it, 716-748-9539. The code is 06137 # If everybody could put their mute button on, there's a little sound from the background. Thank you. And if people have questions about the teleconferences or the vigils, you can call Francis at 561-907-6671. To call Francis is 561-907-6671. Then the Ancient Paths blog talk show will begin its first series on January 19th at 8:30 p.m. And there will be three programs on the Trinity. The January 19th one is the first of the programs on the Trinity that you will not want to miss. And the other programs will be February 16th and March 30th. The number for that program is 215-383-5863, 215-383-5863. On February 10th at 8 a.m., the show distinctly eloquent worship do will be a special guest of a different show of Blog Talk, The Female Solution. And we will cap the hour with songs in celebration of Black History Month. And you can also listen. Do you want me to talk about the original, the first debut of DEW?
Yeah, DEW is the acronym for Distinctly Eloquent Worship. And to hear that, we debuted that on the 9th, December 9th. And so just as you came on to see the description for today, it's the same, except you add on – oh, go ahead. You can share that. I'm sorry that I interrupted. Go ahead, Annabelle.
Oh, that's okay. I'll say the whole thing in case people don't have it, in case they're on the phone or something. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/2016/12/09. That's the date. /soul purpose healing.
It has to say soul purpose healing. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/soul purpose healing.
I got the order wrong.
Yeah, you got the order wrong. /2016/12/09/distinctly eloquent worship. distinctly eloquent worship. But I can give that to you whenever you have any questions or just want to listen to any of the shows. And this one today, we'll send out how that, well, Viana will send me the link and I will send it to everyone that's on the line. And then you can pass it on to others. For the Trinity, we will be talking of from the very beginning of the mother father idea, and then moving on to the son, which she mentioned the date for in February, and then to the Holy Spirit in March, and that is at 8:30 p.m. These are all on Thursdays. The Blog Talk show, except for when I am a guest on the other, which is the Female Solution. So I will give you that information, and we will repeat it again. But hopefully you will be with us on the 19th. That's a Thursday at 8:30 p.m. for the first of the three-part series on the Trinity. Thank you. Thank you, Annabeth.
Thank you. And do you want to go ahead and read the quote from Dr. King?
Yes, I want to do that at the end. I'm wondering, Viata, if there are any questions or comments that anyone would like to add to the conversation today, just press 1. You're welcome to press 1 so we see that you're in the queue.
There's no questions at this time.
Okay. All right. So, Viata, do you have the music? Do you have my region music? Or no?
This world, tell me what it's gonna be, or what it's gonna take for us to see. This world will no longer be if we don't change our tendencies. Can't wait, life will pass you by. So while you're here, at least you can do is try to save this world instead of living in sin. I'm trying to do my part while it still spins.
But truth calls, I see the world is turning. away from the bleed. And plus our air, we blew and shooting rockets to the sky. Disregard all overseas, live in hell, we'd rather die. And I feel the world shifting under my feet. So if you feel the heat, just know it's burning in me.
Don't wait till the last minute.
Inherited a big house, a great rural house, in which we have to live together, black and white, Easterners and Westerners, Gentiles and Jews, Catholics and Protestants, Muslim and Hindu, a family unduly separated in ideas, culture, and interests, who, because we can never again live without each other, must learn somehow in this one big world to live with each other. Dr. Martin Luther King, Nobel Prize lecture of 1964. Thank you. Thank you for sharing with me. I want to thank you, Annabeth, for being my guest host, and for the music. Annabeth's idea was to share that. That's a local artist here in Lake Worth where I am. And we will continue, as the saying goes, continue the struggle. So, Annabeth, you have last word?
I just want to be, I'm very grateful to everybody who's come on to the show today. I found the information absolutely fascinating. I'm going to go back myself and re-listen because I want to hear again what people had to say and offer and what people are doing. So I'm really grateful to all of the guests who came on and for your time, your energy, for all the work you're doing in the world. Marija is the name of the person who created that the music that we listened to. And I'm grateful to be on this show. I'm pleased. Thank you so much. This has been really a delight, and I feel like I'm participating in something that's really meaningful. So thank you all.
Thank you. I would like to say that I'm just to a it's called the Pine Ridge Community Center, and we have some children who have been learning about Dr. King. We started last week. We are going to be working today on this World House quote about learning to live together with all our wonderful differences. And we are going to be doing something, we shall see what, with the Compassion Games with this group and some others here in the Gainesville area in Florida. And so I would offer to anybody who is interested in finding a way, find some children and let them lead you and start yes. with some games and let's play together.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. And thank you for the quote. I want to thank all my guests. I'm just really excited for what we've been called to do. I know this is just the beginning because it's going to spread. It has, but with us, as many of you said, it begins with us. So that is what we'll do. We will demonstrate, teach, and advocate. Thank you, everyone. Have a blessed week.